Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, thank you for bringing the wine this evening. Mm-hmm. What am I drinking?
I went back to a good old standby, red wine, and a very, very easy connection for you to make to one of today's movies.
I'll see if I can figure it out. The title of this wine is Belle Ambiance.
Mm-hmm.
This is tricky. Belle,
what do you think? Is there any movie coming out that might have a Belle in it?
Apparently, this new live action, I don't know why they call it live action when it's mostly green screen and digital, but this live action Beauty and the Beast is still supposed to break the bank this weekend.
Yeah, well, out of all the movies that we're going to talk about, I know you will disagree, but it is far and away the best of the bunch.
I saw four that I'm going to talk about, and it's number four of four. I like three movies this week better than Beauty and the Beast.
And I think our reviews are totally flipped this week, which is how you like it.
It's going to be so much fun.
How you like it.
All right, I'm going to start you off with a question.
Mm-hmm.
And you can answer it as long, short as you want. Beauty and the Beast remake, what's the point? I've seen this movie. You've seen this movie. Everybody has seen this movie. What's the point?
The point is that it's done all the time, and sometimes it's done really well, and there's new technology. There's new ways to tell a story. There's a new audience. I mean, people, the animated version was 1991.
I was ready. Thank you for falling into that. Like, I was ready for that answer. New generations, right? Let's open it up to new generations.
New generations, but also it's an opportunity for old generations, too, to revisit a story that they really loved without having to go back and see a G-rated cartoon.
So in 1987, I saw Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs,
mm-hmm.
and it was the 1937 version. Animated. It wasn't live action, but I still went to the theater to see it. And it reached a new generation, Hannah.
And did you not know that there was like a Cinderella that was animated that then was made into all these live action Cinderella stories?
But they didn't need to make a live action Snow White because the animated one drew me in anyways.
I'm not saying that this one should displace the favor you have of the original.
I don't have the favor. It's not
version.
My favorite Disney by far. I just don't want to see it again.
If it had been done really poorly, I would say I'm with you on that. But it's done well, and it has a certain appeal, and some people are really loving it. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I did not love it. I was not over the moon with it. But I think they actually did as well as they could with what they were setting out to do in this movie. And you've got good cast, some good new songs, and just a new way of telling the story visually that, granted, incorporates CG for the Beast, but the rest of the cast, you know, they really come alive in a fun way. And so if you just kind of take a step back and just enjoy it for what it is, you might actually like it.
Do you think there could, I don't know if it's with this one or the next one, a case of the law of diminishing returns. We saw Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. We saw Maleficent. We saw Cinderella. We saw The Jungle Book. This is like the fifth one now in like 5 years. And they're not done. Coming up, Tim Burton's Dumbo. Guy Ritchie's Aladdin. Jon Favreau, the guy who did The Jungle Book. Jon Favreau's The Lion King. Cruella, starring Emma Stone. And The Little Mermaid. They're all greenlit. They're all on the way, Hannah.
Well, but so the good thing is that this one's very entertaining, and so it set a bar for all those other movies. And so
Jungle Book was better.
I like this better than Jungle
Christopher
Book.
Christopher Walken.
I like this better than Jungle Book. I think, Emma Watson, she doesn't have the strongest singing voice in the world, but I think she embodies the character of Belle really nicely. I liked Robbie Benson's voice as Beast in the 1991 version probably better than I like the speaking voice of the Beast in this movie, Dan Stevens.
I was shocked to find out this was Dan Stevens. I didn't realize I knew who Dan Stevens was until I looked him up, and I've been watching him on a television show every week now on the FX station. He's in Legion. He is the main character in the X-Men spin-off television show called Legion, and I cannot believe it is the same guy. It is shocking.
It is kind of surprising, but it's also because he's buried under a lot of hairy stuff for this movie. But most people also will know him from Downton Abbey as Matthew Crawley, and so I think that's also where he's well known. And so I thought that he was good when he was singing. Like, I thought he has this new power ballad song in the middle of this movie.
That's a good way to put it, power ballad.
It's a power ballad. It just reminded me of one of those songs where, I think it's called Evermore, and it's the type of song that if you were watching like a Les Mis or a Moulin Rouge, that would just be that final number at the end of Act One before the curtain falls. And so as a new addition to the musical numbers, I thought that one was really good, and he did a really good job with it.
Speaking of Moulin Rouge, I go into movies blind. I don't know who's who. I don't know what's what. I did not realize Lumiere was Ewan McGregor until the credits. I didn't put it together. I didn't hear it. I didn't see it. I was shocked.
Yeah, I forgot that connection was there. So yeah, because we know that he does have a very good singing voice too. But the supporting cast is
fine. Emma Thompson's fine. Everyone's good. I'll put it in your words. It's fine. They're okay. But I think the MVP is Dan Stevens. I think the Beast did the best. But my runners up, I have two runners up, and I was very they were just good. I was just happy every time they're on screen. Luke Evans as Gaston,
absolutely,
and Josh Gad as LeFou,
absolutely.
They're all stars.
Yeah, no, they are. Luke Evans was spot on as that sort of obnoxious, self-centered guy who's wooing Belle, and Josh Gad as LeFou. You know, there was the whole controversy that came out saying that, oh, he was the first openly gay character that Disney has put out there.
Which, all right, let's stop right here and talk about it. If there's, it's all over the news. LeFou was gay. There's a gay scene. There's a theater in Alabama that won't screen it. The Russian government, the Ministry of Culture, is banning this film. Wait. I was looking for it. I had my eagle's eye open.
Me too.
You have to tilt your head and read between the lines to think you can determine LeFou's sexual identity.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's such an overblown controversy that I could not believe it, because in many ways it really came off on screen, certainly initially, as a man crush. You know, it's just a man crush between that LeFou has for his sidekick, you know, for this guy that he wants to emulate of Gaston. And so there's one really, really, really quick scene at the very end.
It's fast.
It's so fast.
And it doesn't have to mean what you
and
think it means.
It doesn't have to mean anything. And so I think by putting it out there, it diminished the impact. Like, it's like, just, it is what it is. He's just another character. He's another person in this town. And I don't think he needed to have a label on him. I think that was a huge mistake.
So it is a little different from the animated version. They took these characters and they can make them deeper now. There's a little bit more backstory. Not a lot. It's very limited, but there's some more backstory telling you where Belle came from, where the Beast came from. There's new songs. And each character's personalities, I think, is taken a bit more to the extreme. Mm-hmm. So Gaston, he's actually a little bit more of a narcissist than he was. The Beast is angrier. And LeFou is just, I don't know, happier, grander. so everything's just a little bit more extreme. I don't know why the director chose to do this. Director is Bill Condon. He won an Oscar for adapting Chicago. He was nominated for an Oscar. No, sorry. He won that Oscar for Gods and Monsters back in 98.
Really?
For adapting Gods and Monsters. He was nominated for Chicago.
And he did Dreamgirls.
And he directed Chicago. He directed Dreamgirls. Mm-hmm. And most recently in 2015, he directed Ian McKellen in Mr. Holmes. Ian McKellen showing up here again as Cogsworth. Let's talk about the print we saw. I hope. What if this is true for all prints? It was in 3D, and 3D already takes away 20% of the light. The glasses you put on are dark. They take away 20% of the light. But, you know, most of the time, if it's done well, you don't really notice. This screen was pitch dark. It was fuzzy. I hated this in 3D.
I wondered about that because I immediately also discounted the 3D as completely worthless in this case so that people would not have to bother seeing it in 3D. But then my friend Ab, who writes for The Realness, he actually pointed out this morning, he said that he loved the 3D and that the 3D was amazing and it took you into the castle. And so I really do wonder whether or not we just saw a subpar 3D print of this movie, because I felt the whole way through that it was just almost like having this dark filter on it. And so I'm almost tempted at some point to go back and see it again, just on a big screen in 2D and see visually what it's like. Because I do think the fact that we saw a screening where it stopped and they had to restart it, it threw things off a little bit.
Well, yeah, Disney, I want you to know you have a bad print out there, and it's sitting in Silver Spring, Maryland. And it just reminds me, I'm just why I'm so cynical about what Disney is doing with this string of remakes. It's just for money. It's just plainly for money, because they can still be creative and original. They just won an Oscar for Zootopia. They won one 2 years ago with Frozen. They're capable of bringing out new films.
They are, but I disagree. I think people are going to take to this movie. And
you really think this is about love of movie for Disney? You don't
think
this is about the
cash
grab? I think
it's about love of the story. I think it truly is about love of the story.
This is just so easy for them to recycle films. They barely have to lift a finger.
But at least they did it well. And if they didn't do it well, it's a completely different story.
Well, they didn't do it well. I didn't like it.
Well, just that's just you, Charlie. But I do think they did it well enough. I think they did it as well as they probably could. I think people who like a good movie musical live action, if they like the adaptations of things like Cinderella, then they're going to like this one too, and Les Mis. And so it's not unusual for these things to jump between the stage and the animated versions and the live action versions. It's no different to me than when they reboot.
It used to be unusual. Movies. Now it's 2 a year.
It's standard. It has become standard. And again, the day that they stop making them well and that they tank.
Yeah, it was called Alice Through the Looking Glass.
That right. But so then this is a bounce back. So it shows that it can be done well. And hopefully it sets the bar for these other movies coming down the pike to know that crap of just not providing something fresh and making sure that your cast is good. And so people are going to enjoy it. It's going to make gobs of money, and it's going to be by far the biggest movie of the week, and it's by far better than any of the other four that
we saw.
It's
probably
going to
be the biggest movie of the year. I mean, this thing's going to make some serious coin.
And it will get repeat viewers, because you do want to kind of grasp some of those new songs again. I found a great article on MTV.com about ranking the 14 new songs in the or 14 songs
total.
It's
like they are not 14 new songs.
No, the 14 songs from the movie.
I hope Gaston was number one.
Gaston, I think it might have been
number
one.
That's my favorite song.
I think it was. And so, and you know, you got to put out there that Celine Dion has a song in the closing credits
that
is total. Oh, come on. That is total Oscar bait.
No, the Ariana Grande, John Legend song. Yeah, they're still singing Tales of the Time.
There are several songs.
That song is much better than Celine Dion's song.
But it's Celine Dion, and I considered that to be just one of those ones that I don't think we've heard the last of.
If you have trouble falling asleep, turn that song on.
Oh, come on.
So Beauty and the Beast is based on this, you know, 19th century story from a French lady. And our next film is based on a novel as well. And I didn't see this, so Hannah's going to review this solo. But I read the novel.
You did.
I read the novel. I didn't realize it until today. It's by a man named Julian Barnes. He won the Man Booker Prize for this novel, and that's the only reason I read it, because I usually read the Booker Prize winner. And I remember it was about an older man reflecting back earlier on his university days, his school days, and how what he views now is totally different than what happened. I know you didn't read the novel, but how did you feel about that story and film?
Well, it's funny because I actually didn't realize until today that it was based on a book. And so that was new to me.
They made a book out of that?
Yeah. So I'm curious to know. You'll have to go and see it just so that you can tell me how it compared to the book. I mean, it's a fine movie. I suspect it's probably a very good adaptation. It's very British. That's all I can ever really think about it. It just has that sensibility.
So like Downton Abbey British?
It is. It's like, but it's a terrible title to remember. Like, I could never remember what that movie, what I was going to see, the sense of an ending, because I was thinking Sense and Sensibilities. And so I think that that's actually going to be a problem for anyone who's not familiar with the book to find this movie. But it's another one of those movies for grown-ups. You know, the casting is really, it includes some of Britain's finest actors. So you have Jim Broadbent as playing the lead, as this guy who is reflecting back on his past and piecing together sort of a mystery from his past, because he gets a letter that indicates that the mother of an ex-girlfriend left him something in her will when she died. And so he's trying to track down what it is, and the ex-girlfriend doesn't want him to have it. And it sort of then turns into this kind of time jumping. You see a little bit various things that happened when he was at university and his friends from that time period. And it has Charlotte Rampling in it. And so it was very reminiscent to me to some degree of seeing her in 45 Years, where you were going back, where this older gentleman has this mystery he's unraveling from his past. And it colors everything that has happened in the present. And so so to see her again in this, I liked her better in 45 Years, but she's still, you know, a powerhouse. And Michelle Dockery, also all the Downton Abbey people are showing up.
Yeah, there's a Downton Abbey name.
They're showing up in all of these movies now. So, you know, it's just about the devastating consequences of a decision that he had made a long time ago, and how he's just learning what some of those consequences were, and trying to make peace with them. And it's just it's solid, but it's one of those kind of slow burn dramas that that fans of English of British fans of the Downton Abbey and The Crown and other British TV and film are probably going to take to this film pretty well. Everyone else, if they're not into watching that type of drama, probably are not going to seek this one out.
You know, I was going over in my mind right now the plot, and it's very slowly coming back, but I remember there being a very big twist at the end.
There is, which I'm not going to give up just
in
case.
No, not at all, but I remember being, I was reading it and just shocked, because it's not a long novel at all. It's quite short. It's broken up into two parts. It's called 1 and 2. And I remember being floored when during the big reveal. Does that happen in the film?
Yes, it does. And it is probably very faithful to the book. And if you've read the book, I think you might be very interested in seeing this movie. It's just solid. It's good. It's I think I would put it – I would rank it second in line with the movies that we've seen this week. So right now we're sort of going we're going in order.
We are not going in order. In fact, we're actually getting a little bit better as we go along.
See? I think I'm telling you, we're completely reversed this week.
So our next film, we've already talked about a movie set in France. It wasn't filmed in France. It was filmed on a London stage, Beauty and the Beast I'm talking about. But our next film is actually filmed in Paris, on the streets of Paris, mostly from a motor scooter. It's called Personal Shopper, and it's from if you're into film, you know this director, Olivier Assayas. We know him from 2 years ago, from Clouds of Sils Maria. That's where Kristen Stewart became the only American actor ever to win a César Award. That's the French Oscars. They usually give them to French actors or British actors, you know, people they consider actors. The French are cinephiles. They are not afraid of film experimentation and out there film the way Americans are kind of afraid of that. And they recognize Kristen Stewart for her work in that film. And it was a great film. I liked it a little bit better than this one we're talking about, Personal Shopper. It went to Cannes. He opened it at Cannes. And just like they have fun. They can stand up and applaud after a film for 15 minutes. Or they can boo it. And Personal Shopper got booed. But he also won. Olivier won. He was a co-winner of Best Director. So you can get booed but still win Best Director at the Cannes Film Festival. And I just love that about that.
That's, I'm sure you do.
Fascinating. I think Personal Shopper is sneaky. I think it could be, if you're paying attention, a sneaky sequel to Clouds of Sils Maria. It's not a spoiler to say at the end of that movie, Kristen Stewart disappears. She just leaves. She was a personal assistant in that film to a globally recognized celebrity, an actress. And she just disappeared. And all of a sudden, a personal shopper, she's a personal assistant again. She's a personal shopper for a global celebrity, a supermodel. She goes and picks out her haute couture clothes from Paris and over to London, shoes, accessories, that sort of thing. And she's conflicted about her job. She rolls her eyes about it. She makes fun of the supermodel. And she thinks, this job is beneath me. But on the other hand, she also thinks it's a little bit above her because she wants to try these dresses on. She wants to try these shoes on and kind of play act a little bit, see what it would feel like. So that's fun to see her chafe against that employment. Did you pick that up?
I did pick that up, but also because they tell us it's dangerous to do that. And she embraces the danger of knowing that she's not supposed to be trying on this woman's clothes. And but when she's not home, you know, what she doesn't know can't hurt her kind of thing. And this movie, I'm sorry, it's just, it's abstract. And I do think that Olivier Assayas wrote it for, he did say that he wrote it for Kristen Stewart. So
he's discovered a muse.
He obviously was very impressed
and
with
she's
her.
She's good.
And he's apparently, you know, already ready. They're ready to work together again. So God only knows what's coming out in the future. But it's, what's so funny to me is that everybody, this movie, she's not just a personal shopper, but she's a medium. So she's a personal shopper by day who also can speak to the spirits and is trying. The reason she's in Paris at all is that she's going to the house where her twin brother had lived and is really just trying to communicate with her recently departed twin brother, who also had these sort of paranormal skills. And they had promised each other that whoever died first would try and communicate with the other one. And so you're kind of, that's a big part of this movie. And it's a ghost story, and it's a very cerebral ghost story. And the fact that Kristen Stewart gets all this kudos for talking to ghosts in Personal Shopper and yet is often mocked for her role as a vampire wannabe in the Twilight series that made her famous, to me is just rather ironic.
You know, there's a tie-in there. Bill Condon, the guy who directed Beauty and the Beast, directed the Twilight saga Breaking Dawn's Part 1 and 2.
Oh, see? 2 degrees of separation among all these people.
So it's interesting. It shocked a lot of people that Olivier Assayas would make somewhat of a genre film. It's a ghost story. It's paranormal. It's supernatural. And I think I was happier when that part was on screen, the ghost story. She has a run-in with a ghost in this abandoned French estate in the countryside. And that's the best scene in the film. She's cowering in the fetal position on the floor. And there's this thing above her. And it's doing something very strange that would unsettle, well, me, you, any normal human being. And Kristen Stewart, too. She's terrified, even though she is a medium. And she accepts that she can, I don't know, hear, see other dimensions, I guess. And this thing, just the way it looked, the way it felt, was just such a good, powerful scene. I really liked it. I did not like the mystery in this film. Olivier Assayas is doing something with technology. He's commenting on our relationship with cell phones and laptops, because she spends a lot of time curled up, like almost romantically, with her cell phone.
Texting,
watching movies, researching. And she's, yeah, some unknown number starts texting her very intimately. And they talk about what she's afraid of, what she does. And I guessed it. I guessed it almost immediately. And I was right. And it took me just out of the movie. I saw exactly where it was going. And I thought, that's a little beneath you there, Mr. Assayas. You can do a little bit better than that.
See, and I did not see it coming quite as
you mixed
as
up the characters.
I did. I was mixing up the characters. And I saw when I saw Assayas speaking on Charlie Rose, I think, the other day with Kristen Stewart. And he really makes a point that everyone has their own experience and interpretation with his films, and that's what he goes for. And so he compares it to your relationship with a work of art. And so everyone has a very different analysis of what happened. And so I can appreciate that on a very artistic level. But while I would not have been among the part of the crowd booing this film, I also would not be giving it a standing ovation. I just thought it was weird and okay, but I did not love it at all.
I know, I did not boo. I've been known to boo films. I remember last year after Ben-Hur and Gods of Egypt, I might have stood up and just booed at the screen and like thrown a tomato.
I think you were doing that during the
movie.
But
I did not boo at the end of that because, you know, I'm not afraid of the open ending, the one that doesn't close it. the one that doesn't answer it for you. I remember after when this ended and it went to the credits, half the audience went, "Oh!" Because he doesn't explain it to you.
No, and he never will. And that's his whole, you know, modus operandi.
And it doesn't bother me. Like, Phil, you know, a couple, 10 films a year, that'll do that to you. Like, you're an old hand at this now. You know, okay, this happens. But some people just, you know, they see this once a year and they just feel cheated.
Yeah. And that's just it. People do feel cheated. And if you don't like feeling cheated at the end of a movie and you don't necessarily go for the kinds of movies that are completely left open to interpretation, that you will never really know what was meant to happen. And no,
I think that's where
explored.
The fun begins. That's where I start to work.
That's fun for you.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't like working at the movies. You know, I can work on occasion, but for the most part, that's why A Beauty and the Beast is always a relief to me once in a while when you just have
You just admitted Beauty and the Beast is a pile of fluff.
No, wait,
that
no,
you don't have to
no.
think about.
I don't think there's a, no, there's a huge difference between pile of fluff and very weighty, cerebral, abstract art.
Think of it like a film, like a meal. Like Beauty and the Beast is you're laid back on the couch and someone's just shoving pizza in your face. Personal Shopper is you're sitting up straight at the table with a very complicated wine and this thing on your plate that you have to dissect with your fork and knife.
Yeah, that sounds so fun. Thanks.
All right, our next film I think is our biggest split because I think it's the best film by far of the week and you could just you would just throw it in the trash. And it's a very small independent film and it's called Donald Cried. It is from director, writer, and lead actor Chris Avedisian. And I just connected with this film. After I saw it, I wanted to race to the computer to write my thoughts down. So I didn't forget because I wanted to study these two characters. And it's a standard plot. It's older guy on the border middle age, you know, 20, 25 years out of high school, goes back to his hometown. We've seen this countless occasions. Usually it involves a high school reunion. But this is not the high school nerd makes good and comes back to impress people. This guy left town because he didn't like who he was in high school, and he left and became this, what he says, finance in Manhattan. I have a hunch it's
Wall
not
Street
as...
Wall Street kind of thing, yeah.
I have a hunch he's not as successful as he says he is, but his grandma died, so he's responsible to go back and clean up the affairs. He wants to get in and out, get the house on the market, get her ashes, clean up the place, and just get out of town. And there's a gimmick. He loses his wallet because they had to find some way to keep him in town. Now he's stuck. And he has to begrudgingly trudge across the street and knock on the door of Donald's house. Donald is Chris Avedisian. And he's brilliant. Donald hasn't changed in 20 years. He's the
15.
Same.
It's 15.
Is it 15?
Yeah. See, I actually studied two with these movies.
I thought it was almost 20 to 25 years.
He went home after about 15 years.
So Donald.
Still young.
Same bedroom, so probably same clothes, same everything. He hasn't changed. They were metalheads in high school, and they were best friends. And they now have to spend the day together. Our man, Peter Letang, is relying on Donald to chauffeur him around town. He needs to borrow some dough. And he doesn't like Donald. He doesn't like who he is around Donald because I think he's tempted. He could backslide into who he once was. And Donald, this is the best day of his entire life. He's been waiting for this day for 15 years. His best friend is back in town. And you know he's just been planning what he would do on this day. He's lobbing conversations at Peter to remind him how good things were, but it's actually having the opposite effect. It's reminding Peter of how awful he was in high school and how
he escaped for
he
a
does
reason.
Not miss this nowhere town in Rhode Island. And I love that it was took place in a foot of snow. Because it's just so difficult to get anywhere. And it slowed him down. And, man, there's just something about this film that's so special.
I think it's special to the dudes. I think it's a dude movie. And so it was a good movie, actually, to watch on a snow day, which I did. So when we had our major snowstorm that wasn't earlier this week, I did watch this Donald Cried. And, you know, it was fine, but it's really... You know, it's this dark comedy melodrama, and these characters are very quirky. Donald is very quirky. He just, you know, he still lives with his mother and his stepfather, and it's awkward. The dynamic between these two guys is very awkward. They go and they smoke their pot, and they kind of go back in time in some way. So there are times where Peter is happy to be back in that old frame of mind and relive those days, and then other times where he is sort of going back to his present day self and trying to be the more mature adult that he had left this town to become. And it's an art house indie without a doubt. I mean, that's what this is. And it's kind of slow moving. But for some reason, I think because it's this bro film, you know, the guy's so happy to have his old bro back. I do think that it will, dudes will relate to it differently than the gals will. And so I think you saw it in a very different filter than I did.
I see where you're coming from. I think I do relate to it because it is a bro film. And I can relate to a guy who doesn't want to go back to his hometown because I like myself better now, you know, in 2017 than I did maybe back in 1998. A lot of people say, and I've read it on a couple places, Donald is an extreme case of arrested development, a failure to launch. He never went anywhere. And I do not agree.
I do.
He's a man who realized he was happiest in high school. He had the time of his life in high school. And now he's unhappy, and he wants to remember how, if he stays the way he is, he will keep that happiness. And because if you go to, you would not walk a mile in Donald's shoes now. He's probably inside the most miserable person you would ever know. And I don't think that's arrested development. I just think that's real emotion.
No, I think it was arrested development. I do. I think that's what they were showing. They were showing that you had this character who did not move on from who he was in high school. And then you had this other guy who did move on, but when put back into that setting of, you know, growing up, you know, in the insecurities of the time, that he's sort of struggling with who he was before versus who he is now, and whether there is sort of a middle ground to be found between the life that he chose for himself outside of this town and who he was in this town. And so it just, I can relate to this idea of stepping back into your old life just for a day. And that's really what this movie is. This guy's going back into his old life basically for a day. And so it's an interesting concept. I just think that it is, it's just, I think better for, I think guys just watch it differently and will get more out of it. And it's just going to be a difficult one for most people to go. I can't imagine too many people going and seeking this
one out. Well, this is only in like one theater per major city. But I think Chris Avedisian, the writer, director, lead actor, is really on the verge of becoming a great filmmaker. That scene where they finally tell the story of why Donald cried, what Peter did that day to make Donald cry, and there's silence. They don't even talk about it. They can't talk about it. Any other director or writer would have made that this emotional, melodramatic scene. Well, I did it. I'm sorry. Well, I can't believe you did that. Blah, blah, blah. They don't even talk about it. And it's never mentioned again. Even though the movie's called Donald Cried, and they never mention it again. Brilliant move.
Yeah, I can't argue with the fact that it's well done, and that the actors are both very good. And they actually portray a lot of emotion just through the glances and the looks that they give each other. So they pull off a lot of layers of their characters without dialogue sometimes. And so I do not argue with the fact that it is a well-made movie and an interesting concept. It just was not my cup of tea.
All right, moving on. We saw a documentary this week, and it's called Betting on Zero, and it's, depending on who you are, it's one of those documentaries that just, you know, people watch documentaries to get upset. Like, there's a problem in the world, and this guy's exposed it, now I'm upset and I want something to happen. Or you just watch the documentary to see, you know, just to see a story, and that's kind of how I watch this. Herbalife. I don't know if, I've kind of heard of Herbalife before. It's like this nutritional supplement, this milkshake, kind of like Slim Fast, but expensive. And it's expensive because they don't sell it in stores. They call it multi-level marketing. That's code. I've heard of multi-level marketing. That's a pyramid scheme. If you don't make money by selling the product, but by signing up more people to sell a product. That's a pyramid scheme. And there's a man on Wall Street. He's a very divisive man. His name is Bill Ackman. He bet. He saw that Herbalife was this huge pyramid scheme, and he bet a lot of money. He bet $1 billion of his clients' money that Herbalife as a company, as a stock, would fail. He shorted the stock. And a lot of people don't like Bill Ackman because he then went on television. He's a very well-known man, and it looks like he tried to manipulate the stock himself. Mm-hmm. He railed against Herbalife, and people thought he did that not as an altruistic, not as a service, but for money, to drop the price himself. So other people got on the other side saying, Herbalife's this great company. So you have these two sides. We have, they never interview the CEO one-on-one. They could just have him from other interviews and Herbalife videos. But Bill Ackman, he participated. They had him in the chair. The other side of it is they accuse Herbalife of targeting low-income communities, immigrant communities. And you see some of those here, especially in Chicago, these native Spanish speakers that get sucked in and lose all of their money to Herbalife. And this isn't the greatest documentary I've ever seen. It's got cheesy, gimmicky clip art of like money stacks. But there's a story in here to be told, and I liked listening to it.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through it. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to finish it before we got here. But it's one of those stories that you would sort of see bits and pieces of it on like a Dateline or a 2020 Investigates kind of thing. And it is designed, it does take a viewpoint, and it is designed to spark some outrage. And there's no doubt when you're watching this movie unfold that it's a pyramid scheme and that some people made just a ton of money and other people lost a lot of money. I remember seeing the giant building, the real estate that the Herbalife company had developed across the country was phenomenal. And so you just wonder how this just kept going and the amount of money that they did make. But it is hard to be completely sympathetic towards the guy who's betting on them to be busted for a pyramid scheme. And so that bothered me too, the idea that there are people out there gaming the system.
Now, there's no heroes in this film on either side. Herbalife, there's something sleazy going on in the company. But the guy betting on them to fail is, sleazy too.
Yeah.
There's a Washington, D.C. connection to this film. Every year in October, D.C. has a film festival called the Double Exposure Film Festival that explores the intersection between film and investigative journalism. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, Spotlight headlined that festival, and it went on. It was the D.C. premiere of that film, and it went on to win the Oscar, and it's great. When you think about film and investigative journalism, boom, you think Spotlight. Mm-hmm. So they put Betting on Zero last year in the festival. Herbalife hired a lobbyist called Heather Podesta and Partners, very famous last name there, by the way, Podesta.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
They bought 10 people working for that firm bought 173 tickets to the showing of this film and didn't show up.
Wow.
So they did not want DC filmgoers, DC audiences to see this film. And that just makes me think, when that happens, the movie's probably right.
Right, and you want more people then to go see it.
Absolutely. It pisses me off.
And that it's designed.
How dare you?
Right, and this movie is absolutely designed to spark outrage. It just is. And I love those intersections between the investigative journalism and the documentary. And so I do think that that it was it's an interesting story to tell. It's a traditional documentary in its presentation.
This has no money in it. It's a micro-budgeted mm-hmm. thing. You could tell they just made this by the skin of their teeth. And for some fancy lobbying firm to swoop in and deny people a chance to see this film, I might have just, gotten mad at this and just moved on. But when I read that article, I just want to tweet and Facebook and tell everybody about this far and wide to go see this movie, because that's just wrong.
Yeah, and I certainly was not really aware of what was happening with Herbalife. All I knew is that there was obviously a lot of money in this organization, in this company. And so to see just what was going on and for, it's very possible that the product was okay and that the product really did work for people.
No one's disputing that it's not a nice nutritional supplement.
It's just that it made its money, that it's one of those situations where a few profited off of the work of a lot of other people who did not see a benefit, did not get the payoff that a few chosen at the top actually got to see. So that's sad.
That's how they make money. Mm-hmm. People have to fail in Herbalife for the top to make money. And that's some people think that's against the law. There is a postscript at the end of what's happening now. There's a tie-in to the Trump administration. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
There are two films we did not see this week. One, I wouldn't even know how we've seen it, but it's called This Beautiful Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't get an opportunity to see it.
And there's another one that they didn't screen for critics, but it just had such an interesting premise called The Belko Experiment.
Don't know that one.
Put a bunch of office workers in a building and tell them to kill each other.
Huh.
I want to see that.
Fine.
I want to see that so bad. All right. Wrap up. Beauty and the Beast is probably one of the year's biggest film. This is Marvel level film. I think it's superfluous and unnecessary.
I think as superfluous and unnecessary as it may have been, it's a good movie, and people are going to go see it, and they're going to enjoy it, and they're going to see it again, and there's not much else you can say about it.
I have one more thing to say about it. If someone tells you don't go see it because it's gay or there's a gay character in it, charter a bus and get all your friends and go see it then.
Yeah. There's absolutely no reason in the world that anyone should not go see this because of that inflated controversy.
The sense of an ending, I remember the novel. I remember a big twist, and that's about it.
If you like British TV shows and movies and really good acting, then and if you've read the book, then definitely go see it. If you haven't read the book and don't know anything about it and don't watch something like The Crown or Downton Abbey, then you probably can take a pass.
Personal shopper, Kristen Stewart is on my best actress list in Chiseled Stone. She is so good in a film that has a couple problems.
She does not affect me in the same way that she obviously does you. So I like Kristen Stewart in something. She's hit or miss for me. I'm one of those ones who actually liked her in Twilight. And I do think she is a very good actress, but she's almost gone so far into the indie world that I miss a little bit more of the mainstream Kristen.
Well, we saw her last year in Cafe Society, Woody Allen film.
Yeah, that wasn't very good.
Donald Cried, my favorite film of the week. I would put down Chris Avedisian as one of the best actors of the year. Donald was great. I think you're right. It's a bro film, and if you have a bro, go see this film.
Absolutely. I'm okay with that.
Betting on Zero, see it because the lobbyists don't want you to. And warn any of your friends that get talked into how awesome Herbalife is. They might want to check this out.
Yeah, and I think it's a cautionary tale about gaming the system and pyramid schemes. So I think if nothing else, you learn a lot about that side of the world and business.
All right, Hannah, thank you for the wine. You at home, thank you for listening. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.